The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
All right. Well, welcome to a new week for us anyway. We start around here on Tuesdays these days. That may change soon. Working on it. And the Republicans, Donald Trump's legal team, such as it is, just wrapped up their opening arguments. They didn't use their full 24 hours over 3 days. It's weird. They took a break, and I wasn't really I watched some of it. I was in and out, but I can just listen to Jay Sekulow for so long, you know? So I tuned out, came back in and getting ready for the show. And as they were coming back into session, and they were back in session for, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes for Jay Sekulow to wrap things up and basically say, let the voters decide in November. You know, we have an election coming up. But he started by saying, we made our case. No, you didn't. So what happens now is they're adjourned until tomorrow, 1 p.m., when they begin their round of questioning. Up to eight hours each day for 2 days, up to 16 hours of questions. But we won't see the senators questioning the two legal teams. They have to write their questions down. The questions will then be given to the Chief Justice, John Roberts, who's presiding over the proceedings, and they'll alternate one from the Republicans, one from the Democrats, one from the Republicans, one from the Democrats. And he told them that the last time they did this, the late Chief Justice said, keep your questions to something that can be answered in 5 minutes or less. So that's what we're going to see for the next 2 days, just to, you know, give you some ample warning. All right. So that's where we are. I think I have to apologize for Friday. I think everything is getting to me again. I'm doing my best to keep my shit together. I just had a miserable day on Friday dealing with health insurance, dealing with finances, dealing with a house, dealing with this impeachment, dealing with these fucking Republicans who twist things around. I mean, I talk about opposite world. I've talked about opposite world for years. Having Ken Starr, I know this was yesterday, it wasn't Friday, but still, Ken Starr lecture the American public on we're entering, you know, the impeachment era. Isn't it ironic, don't you think? We'll get to all of that. I don't know about you. I could certainly use a laugh or two. And our friend, Lauren Mayer, does it again every week. Basically, she knocks out a new song, making light of the dire situations we find ourselves in these days. So without any further ado, hopefully I can get the audio to work correctly today. Here's the latest from Lauren Mayer. It's called A Trial Without Witnesses. Go figure.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to another episode of Hypocrisy Rocks. Impeachment's here, and it's quite clear how much the Senate's repressing. So it seems to me the GOP might need a little lesson.
A trial without witnesses is like Dan Rather without an analogy, Lindsey Graham without hypocrisy, an emperor without clothes. It's like a party that tries to ignore what 72% of us are hoping for, but don't expect any better from these schmoes. A trial without witnesses is like a tea party without grumbling. Collins without crumbling, or a car without a wheel, which Trump says America invented. It's like swearing an oath that you won't heed, or an author who doesn't know how to read. So we probably didn't really write the art of the deal. A trial without witnesses is like a toilet without flushing, word salad without blushing, or a president with no brain. Oh, wait, we already have one of those. Like using a personal cell phone for government calls, or playing tennis without any balls. And I'm tempted to go there, but I'll refrain. Since they got no defense, they'll throw around hack words, running a trial that's ass backwards, showing their incompetence and unfitness. 'Cause it's not a trial without evidence or a witness.
The awesomeness that is Lauren Mayer. Hold on. I got to do this to turn my mic back on. As I said, the awesomeness that is Lauren Mayer. Good one. All right. Lots of breaking news today that has nothing to do with the impeachment. Just in, a 7.7 magnitude earthquake hit off the coast of Cuba, Jamaica, and the Cayman Islands. Now, that in and of itself is frightening. 7.7 is horrific. That is a huge, huge earthquake. To reference, just last week was the anniversary of the Northridge quake in Southern California. I think it was like 92 or 93 or so that I was there for, and I thought the world was ending. That was a 6.3. This is a 7.7. And with each tenth of a point in magnitude increase, it doubles. The strength of the earthquake doubles, with each tick up of a tenth of a point in magnitude. So a 7.7 is devastating. Now, what's really weird is, you know, I live in South Florida, and I'm in Broward County. So it goes, Monroe County is the Keys, then Miami-Dade County, then Broward County. So we're not at the bottom of Florida. So we're at least a few hundred miles away from Cuba, where I'm at. And I don't know, it was maybe an hour ago. It might have been right around the time that the earthquake hit. David called me. We have a pool in the back, as long as we're still in this house. And he's like, look at the pool. And the water was moving. I thought the pump was running. He said, there's no wind and the pump isn't running. The pump was off, but the water was rippling. And he said, maybe we're having an earthquake. Guess what? That might have been it. No, I haven't gone back out back to see if the pool is still now, but how weird is that? 7.7. I would guess there would be some movement here a few hundred miles away from where this earthquake hit. That's frightening. I hope those people are okay. And again, the geography, if we felt it without really feeling it here, I'm sure the people of Puerto Rico were affected in some way. I mean, Jamaica, Cuba, Cayman Islands, that's that whole area, the Caribbean. That's, yes. Yeah. Greg in the YouTube chat room said 7.7 is brain concussion size. Yeah, that's frightening. So if you feel like the world is coming to an end, you're not alone, because that's what it feels like. Donald Trump today hosted Benjamin Netanyahu in the at the White House for a ceremony in which they unveiled their details of this, what they're calling the Middle East peace plan. I'm not even going to justify it with that kind of an explanation. Let me share with a little thread I just read on Twitter by Hady Amir. H-A-D-Y is his first name. Last name is A-M-R. He's a former Obama diplomat on Middle East, Israel, Palestine, Arab economies. All right. So here's his comment on... Let me see if I can find. I just saved his here we go. All right. It's a little mini thread. He writes, the Trump plan slash map is the design for a Palestinian prison. No group of people would ever accept to live unfree under the complete domination of another. Americans would never accept it. The Jewish people will never accept it. And the Palestinian people will never accept it. He continues saying, how do we know Trump Palestine map is more like a prison than a state? Just look at the fact that the Palestinian ports are not even in Gaza. Palestinian exits are through Israeli territory. If you don't know control exists to your house, or if you don't control exits, sorry, if you don't control exits to your house, you have no freedom. You live in a prison. And then he continues, in Trump map, Palestinian territory looks like a Rorschach blot. But look closer and you see a sinister system of separation. Separate but unequal didn't work in America, didn't work elsewhere. It won't work in Israel slash Palestine, and it won't work anywhere. But what Trump plan slash map does do, bookends for Israeli settlers, the max they'll ever get, still a lot, shows how ugly the sinister system of separation would be, makes the case for one state, hopefully unites most Democrats and the world against Israeli annexation. And Benjamin Netanyahu was this morning indicted on 3 counts of corruption in Israel. Yeah, let me, I've got, I'm jumping around now in my What's News notes here, but let me read to you what I had written here from the Birds of a Feather file. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was formally indicted on corruption charges today, just hours before he was set to meet Donald Trump for the unveiling of the U.S. administration's so-called Middle East peace plan. Netanyahu has been charged with bribery and fraud and breach of trust in 3 separate corruption cases. But he's insisted he's innocent, calling the investigations, quote, an attempted coup driven by the left and the media. Sound familiar? Yeah. This makes Netanyahu the first sitting prime minister to face trial in the country's history. No trial date yet, but the legal process could possibly take years. And by the way, Trump briefed Netanyahu yesterday in the Oval Office and then separately briefed his chief political rival, Benny Gantz, in another, you know, separate Oval Office briefing yesterday on what this plan entails. No one from Palestinian leadership has been invited to the White House, just saying. Well, I guess while we're at it, and since I'm doing it live, we should just keep going with what's news, huh? Well, because it would help if I did that. All right. So, well, let me start from the beginning here. Donald Trump's legal team spent 8 hours yesterday on day 2 of their opening statements in the Senate impeachment trial. Figuratively, because I don't want to get into the Adam Schiff mistake of saying something that's a dramatization of what actually happened. My script says singing an Alanis Morissette song. I'll say figuratively singing an Alanis Morissette song. It is. They actually trotted out, as I was saying earlier, Ken Starr, the man who led the impeachment crusade against Bill Clinton over a sexual affair and screamed abuse of power, to argue that impeachment is now being trivialized and used for partisan purposes?
And significantly, in this particular juncture in America's history, the Senate is being called to sit as the high court of impeachment all too frequently. Indeed, we are living in what I think can aptly be described as the age of impeachment.
This is the dawning of the age of impeachment. Oh, sorry, I get carried away. No, this is the song.
Isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
Yeah. It's like rain. Oh, sorry, I jumped the gun there. It's coming here now.
Yeah, I really do think.
It's like rain on your wedding day or, you know, a free ride when you've already paid. Yeah, you get the idea. Anyway, at the height of irony. It's just unbelievable. I'm going to pause in What's News to share this with you. Now, you know, I'm not Not exactly a big fan of Joe Scarborough and the morning jerk crowd. I flip back and forth, honestly, between CNN and Morning Joe. Both morning shows are pretty abysmal. I think, you know, Joe Scarborough and his gang of assholes takes the cake. Donnie Douche, who does nothing but badmouth Bernie Sanders, which, by the way, is all over Twitter today. It's jump on Bernie Day, so it's a good day we can get Bernie's back. Anyway, I happened to be up early this morning, as I tend to be, and happened to catch Joe Scarborough's rant over Ken Starr's presentation yesterday. I got to play. It's a minute and 47 seconds, but it's going to have you, it should have you howling, because for once, I really agreed with Joe Scarborough. Oh, it would help if I turned the volume back up.
Where do we begin with Ken Starr? If irony weren't already dead and buried years ago, it was Ken Starr yesterday talking about how abuse of power is not sufficient to impeach a president. You need a crime. Oh, he literally dragged the corpse of irony out of the grave. He meticulously tied the corpse's neck bone to the back of a tractor. And he ran that tractor throughout the graveyard of stupidity and ran over every headstone before once again kicking dirt on the corpse of irony again and putting its bones back in the grave.
Everybody.
Does Ken Starr say with a straight face, because I was there when he said the capstone of impeachment for Bill Clinton is abuse of power. And then yesterday, he's so sad and mournful. This is so terrible. We're starting to have a culture of impeachment, abuse of power. That's not enough. Oh, wait. I said it was the capstone. You are a Ken Starr. You are a flashing billboard, a gaudily printed, sandwich board sign
going down
Times Square saying we're all dunces. We're all hypocrites. We are all making fools of ourselves. And I haven't even gotten to Pam Bondi.
No. Don't go to Pam Bondi, please. No, and we won't go there. Or even Alan Dershowitz. I mean, it went from Ken Starr to Pam Bondi and Alan Dershowitz. It was insane. And don't worry, I'm not going to play any sound from them. We've had enough assault on our eardrums and our brains and our psyches for a while. And it's not done yet. But there was one glaring omission from the Republicans' presentation yesterday. Even a mention of John Bolton, who had dominated the news and the D.C. chatter since the New York Times broke the story Sunday night of revelations contained in the former National Security Advisor's forthcoming book that Trump last year called for suspending security aid to Ukraine until it committed to investigating Democrats, including Joe Biden. Well, let me rephrase that. There was no mention of Bolton until the end of Alan Dershowitz's presentation, about eight hours into the day's arguments, when Dershowitz said, "Nothing in the Bolton revelations, even if true, would rise to the level of an abuse of power or an impeachable offense." And he teaches at Harvard? Really? And now, a second Bolton book nugget has been reported by the New York Times. In this one, Bolton tells Attorney General William Barr that he had concerns about Trump giving favors to the autocratic leaders of Turkey and China, go figure. And that, according to Bolton's account, he was worried that Trump gave them the impression that he had influence over independent Justice Department investigations relating to entities in both countries. It gets better and better. So in the wake of the news about Bolton's book, the possibility that enough Republicans will join with the Democrats to call for witnesses and documents in this impeachment trial is now in play. Although, you know, with these feckless Republicans, who knows what'll happen? Allegedly, we have Mitt Romney, mendacious Mitt, you can't trust him, and Susan Collins, who are the two that seem most likely to be willing to stand up and say, yes, we are going to vote to call John Bolton as a witness. The other ones they're counting on hopefully flipping, Lisa Murkowski, Lamar Alexander. But who knows? I guess we'll have to wait until Friday. It looks like that'll be when that happens. So as we mentioned earlier, the Trump team concluded their opening arguments today. The trial now moves on to 16 hours of questions, but the senators submit their questions in writing for the prosecution and defense teams, which will be posed through Chief Justice John Roberts, who's presiding over the trial. Sounds like so much fun. Not really. There is other news. Yesterday was pretty devastating. Out of the Supreme Court, a 5-4 vote along ideological lines, the court ruled to let the Trump administration's public charge rule take effect nationally. That public charge rule would restrict immigrants who are considered or could later be considered a, quote, public charge from gaining legal status. What that means is that people attempting to legally immigrate into the U.S. would be assessed to see if they'd ever used public benefits like food stamps in the past, or if they might use them after gaining legal status as a way to keep them from coming in the country. So people who are in economic need, who might want to come here to start a better life, you're not welcome. Wow. There's more. Remember in yesterday's What's News, and on, well, we didn't do a show yesterday, but I did a What's News yesterday. I told you about Mike Pompeo's meltdown after being questioned on National Public Radio about Ukraine. Did you hear this? You know what? I guess I should pull over those clips because I didn't do a show yesterday. And this story gets better and better. So Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, had an interview on National Public Radio. Let me see if I can't find it real quickly. NPR. Okay. That's what the reporter said after the thing. And it was Mike Pompeo. Come on, Pompeo. Oh, here it is. Okay. So Mike Pompeo sits down with Mary Louise Kelly at NPR for an interview. According to emails that have been subsequently released, it shows NPR's producers let Pompeo's people know they were going to ask about a number of topics, including Ukraine. He said that, you know, she was not supposed to ask about Ukraine. This is what happened on the air.
People who work for you in your department, people who have resigned from this department under your leadership, saying you should stand up.
I don't know who these unnamed sources are you're referring to. I can tell you this.
This is your senior advisor, Michael McKinley, a career foreign service officer with 4 decades experience, who testified under oath that he resigned in part due to the failure of the State Department to offer support to Foreign Service employees caught up in the impeachment inquiry on Ukraine.
I'm not going to comment on things that Mr. McKinley may have said. I'll say only this. I have defended every State Department official. We've built a great team.
Sure you have.
The team that works here is doing amazing work around the world.
Where have you defended Marie Yovanovitch?
I've defended every single person on this team. I've done what's right for every single person on this team.
Can you point me toward your remarks where you have defended Marie Yovanovitch?
I've said all I'm going to say today. Thank you.
I've said all I'm going to say today. Thank you. So, Mary Louise Kelly, a very respected NPR host, spoke about what happened after the interview. Listen to this.
I was taken to the secretary's private living room where he was waiting and where he shouted at me for about the same amount of time as the interview had lasted. He was not happy to have been questioned about Ukraine. He asked, "Do you think Americans care about Ukraine?" He used the F word in that sentence and many others.
Uh-oh.
He asked if I could find Ukraine on a map. I said yes. He called out for his aides to bring him a map of the world with no writing, no countries marked.
Huh.
I pointed to Ukraine. He put the map away. He said, "People will hear about this." And then he turned and said he had things to do. And I thanked him again for his time and left.
Wow. Then Pompeo issued an official statement. I don't have it in front of me, and I'm not going to waste your time with it anyway. But at the end, it made up lies, you know, said she lied. She didn't lie. Emails now prove she didn't lie. And he ended the statement with like a P.S. at the bottom that said, Bangladesh is not Ukraine. I guess suggesting that the reporter who has a master knows her shit about the Middle East. This is her subject matter. That she pointed to Bangladesh on the map. She did not. She pointed to Ukraine. But Mike Pompeo, the lying piece of shit that he is, insinuated that by writing at the in a postscript at the bottom of his statement. Bangladesh is not Ukraine. Hey, Mike Pompeo, I got a fucking song for you. And Donald Trump gets around to that, too, because today they had a ceremony at the White House where they unveiled the details of this bullshit so-called Middle East peace plan. And as he's... I can't even believe what that idiot of an orange cretin said. Listen to this. Oh my God. I just saw this right before I came on the air, and I'm still kind of shaking from it.
And of course, our great Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo.
Whoa. Trump is jealous that he got a big round of applause by Trump's sycophants in the room.
That's impressive.
That's impressive.
That was very impressive, Mike. That reporter couldn't have done too good a job on you yesterday, huh? I think you did a good job on her, actually.
Oh, my God. Hey, Donald Trump. Yeah, so anyway. By the way, something I wasn't here yesterday, so I couldn't mark it. But yesterday, survivors of the Nazis' Auschwitz death camp marked the 75th anniversary of its liberation and warned that anti-Semitism is again on the rise around the world. And it is. And I couldn't let the day go by without noting that. I should also note that today is the 34th anniversary of the Challenger shuttle explosion. God, I remember where I was on that day. Just like it was yesterday. I was actually in New York City. I worked at WPLJ. I was producing Jim Kerr and the Morning Crew at WPLJ in New York. And the show had ended. I was in my office, and Jim Kerr was next door. In the office next door was the Jock Lounge, where there was the TV. And I was working in my office. Jim, it was 1986, so we didn't have computers or any of that stuff then, you know, the olden days. And I remember so clearly, I don't know if I was on the phone or I was just writing, I was working on something, and Jim walked into my office with his, and the pool isn't moving at all now. Wow, that was the earthquake. That's wild. So anyway, Jim walked into the office, and he was white as a ghost. And Jim's a pretty white guy anyway, but I've never seen him like this. And he went, "Oh my God, all those kids were watching." And I, at the time, obviously, I didn't know what he was talking about, but he had just watched the shuttle explode on television. And there was a teacher on board that you might remember, and all school children all over the country were watching live as it happened. Whew, I just got... So anyway, that's a weird place to leave this. As I came into the chat room today, the first post from this, from before we even started, was from, I think, Lisa H., who told me today was also the anniversary of a plane crash. And I'm trying to remember what the plane crash was. It was a notable day. And I'm just having a brain fart. But January 28th, I guess, a day that will somehow live in infamy. And our pool is now not moving at all. That's just, wow, 7.7 earthquake off the coast of Cuba. I guess the earth moved. Here in South Florida, too. Wow. All right. I've been yapping long enough. I think it's time we get Laffy on the line, don't you?
And now, it's time for the Nicole Sandler Show segment, Shooting the Shit with Laffy.
Every Tuesday we get together with our pal Gotta Laugh to, you know, talk about what's going on in the news. And we do it really by just blasting through Laffy's Twitter stream. But first, we got to get her on the line. So let me push the right buttons and hello.
Yes, you've reached the All the President's Henchmen hotline.
Okay.
Press 1 if you think a reporter should ask Pompeo to find ethics in the Trump administration on a map.
Yeah.
Press 2 if you think Trump's impeachment lawyer, Jay Sekulow, even makes Giuliani look good. Nobody can make Rudy look good. No. Obviously not his dentist.
Wait, that gets a...
Press 3 if you think Mitch McConnell said, no witnesses, no documents, no food, no coffee, no talking, no cell phones, no facts, no democracy, no reality, no defections. And yet, he's Trump's yes man.
Yes, there is that. Touche.
Have a nice day.
Oh, and it was Kate, Kamishawari Kate in the chat room. He says, today, 1948. Is the day that a plane crashed of Los Gatos that made famous by Arlo Guthrie's song called Deportes, which is a great song. So is it Woody Guthrie, not Arlo Guthrie, wasn't it? I think it was a Woody Guthrie song. I could be wrong. Could be Arlo. Anyway, hi, Laffy.
Hi there.
So.
Hi there. I'm just doing my best to ignore all the stuff that we've been not hearing in the trial lately.
Oh, my goodness.
I had the sound off. I muted my TV from the minute it started with the Republican side.
Yeah, you're probably right to do that.
I popped in literally for about 10 seconds once a day or twice a day and immediately muted again because it was so pathetic. And I just used live tweeting from people I respect. So I can't even believe what's going on. Let's go right to tweets because I have a bunch of them for you that pretty much most of them have to do with the trial, but some of them don't.
Okay. So. All right. So let's go to the tweets. Let loose the Bernies.
The Bernies.
Welcome to my tweet.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
So what is Twitter about today?
Well, Twitter's just going batty crazy. But first, I want to just add on to what you said about that video you just played, the audio you just played of Trump.
Unbelievable.
Congratulating Pompeo on his misogyny.
Unbelievable. Oh, my God.
What happened was you did stop the audio, but what followed was uproarious laughter in the audience.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ugh. See, he's playing to his, laughter. These are his people. These are his creepy, sick, fucked up people who think that's funny. And yep. And what happened after that, which I didn't even get to this part of the story. So Mike Pompeo is going on a trip this week to Europe and Asia, including Ukraine and Kazakhstan, another number of other countries. And there's a traveling State Department press corps that goes with him. Well, right. Without warning yesterday, the reporter from National Public Radio, who is part of the State Department press corps, was told she's barred from the plane. She's not allowed
to go. That's right. That's right. And that was all over Twitter, too. Yeah, he's the misogyny abounds.
Yes. And the blatant politicization of everything. I mean, he's constantly things that should be nonpartisan. I mean, a listener sent me, is on the White House mailing list for whatever reason, email list. And he sent me an official email that came from the White House that was all about blasting the Democrats. It was a partisan, you know, attack mail that we pay for. They're not supposed to do that, but they do everything that they're not supposed to do. And it's like, you can't even keep track of all the things they do that they're not supposed to do. It's just astounding. And we wonder why I'm falling back into my depression.
Oh, I know. Me too. I'm right there with you. I mean, we are paying, not to mention the emoluments clause. We pay for all of that stuff, you know. Well, anyway,
Yeah.
I'm ready to scream right now. So Jennifer Taub.
Okay. I just screamed. That's all.
Oh, good. Thanks. She's, I don't know what the heck she is. Sometimes obscure liberal academic and author of a book. Okay. So she's an author and she writes and she said, listen, and she's live tweeting the trial. She says, listening to him, I think it was, who was this? Philbin, I think. Listening to him is like taking a sedative. I feel like I could get my teeth drilled without pain if the dentist piped in Philbin through the ceiling speakers.
Oh, God. You know, they would have been better off if they just brought back Regis Philbin. He would have been more entertaining.
I know. It's funny. When they first said Philbin, my first tweet was Regis.
Right.
I got so excited.
And what it's funny because what I said to David is he's the least offensive of these, the presenters on the right. He's just god awful. Horrible.
They're all awful.
Horrible.
I wouldn't, you know what? I wouldn't know who's the least offensive because I'm not listening.
Yeah, well. No, I mostly listening. Not. I go in and out. I feel like I have to. Yesterday, I just, you know, I tried. What does the old song go? She tried, but she couldn't do it. She tried. The Lay's potato chips. No one can eat just one. I tried, but I couldn't do it. And Pam Bondi came on.
Yep.
That was it. I was
bye-bye.
Nope,
yeah.
Nope. I don't know.
To you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a couple from yesterday because they all tie in. So Ari Berman said the biggest takeaway from Senate impeachment trial is how Republicans have tried to normalize foreign election interference just as they've normalized voter suppression and other attacks on democracy.
Yeah. Right.
That's an important
and
point.
Again, keeping up the opposite world explanation of how they do things, everything is backwards. They're calling what we're doing, this impeachment, the biggest attempt to steal an election in a generation or some such bullshit, because it's what they do every goddamn day. Try to steal the election.
Everything they say is a lie and or projection, as I keep saying over and over on Twitter. Yeah. Ad nauseum. I get it.
Yep.
Randy Mayhem Singer, who is a screenwriter, said Ken Starr, the guy who impeached Clinton for lying about getting off, is now trying to get Trump off.
Don't you think? Yeah.
Well, they're gaslighters is what
they are.
Chris Hayes said people are pointing out the obvious irony, speaking of which, hypocrisy of Starr decrying the normalization of impeachment. But the deeper message is pretty clear, though not quite stated. We're absolutely going to impeach the next Democratic president.
Oh, because that wouldn't be political. That's not just deciding that we're in the age of impeachment. Which is the dawning. The whole thing is astounding to me. And the fact that, you know, these Republicans are sitting there going, well, yeah, you know what they said.
They're only doing that to save their asses. They agree with everything we're saying. They know it. They know what's going on. They know he's guilty. It's not like they don't know what they're doing. And it's not like the lawyers are as inept as we're making them out to be. They're only doing it because they're getting paid and they know he's guilty.
Right.
So, you know, they just do a bad job of
hey, to the people watching YouTube, did the Lauren Mayer video just start again? Or did my show just, I don't know what, no. Okay. I'm just seeing things.
Everything okay over there?
I think everything's okay. All right, I hope everything's okay.
Alexandra Petrie of Washington Post said, so if I am understanding correctly, a fair process should happen neither in public nor behind closed doors, not with witnesses nor without witnesses,
okay,
quickly but in due time, neither by day nor by night.
Okay.
I think she nailed it.
Oh, yes. She got all the bases covered. She's covering all her bases there. Yeah. Okay.
We should be good. Okay. So Rebecca Ballhaus of Wall Street Journal, she had tweeted that Pat Philbin was on the Senate floor saying, how are we supposed to get the proof of what's inside the president's head? And then Jackie Schechter said, ooh, pick me, because he vomits it all over social media.
Okay.
Then Ellie Mistal says, Philbin, when something gets sent over to the Department of Justice for review, you can't call that a cover-up. And he says, really? William Barr, come on down. Only he did it in all caps. If I yell, it'll hurt your ears, so I'm not going to do that. Okay, so I have a quote that I'm doing over Elizabeth Warren. So Elizabeth Warren says, Trump's peace plan, in quotes, is a rubber stamp for annexation and offers no chance for a real Palestinian state.
Yep.
Releasing a plan without negotiating with Palestinians isn't diplomacy. It's a sham. And I said, kind of like having a trial without calling witnesses.
Ah,
I'm sensing a pattern.
Look at that. You know, I think that deserves a ding.
I get a ding. Yay.
Ding.
It's a two ding day.
Yeah.
Ding day, ding day. Okay, now this won't X out. There we go. Okay, so Schumer gave a press conference before today's proceedings, and he was mocking this. Andrew Prokop tweeted, "It's revealing that Graham and Lankford are even putting stuff like this out there, showing the pressure is on." Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't give you his quote tweet. Where is it?
Oh,
here. I'm sorry. I started in the wrong spot. I'm sorry. Graham said, "I totally support Lankford's proposal that the Bolton manuscript be made available to the Senate, if possible, in a classified setting."
Right. Read the book in a skiff. Right. It's a book, but you need to read it in the skiff. Right.
Right. Which is coming out in March. All right. Yeah. So it's not classified. So then he says it's revealing that Graham and Lankford are even putting stuff like this out there, shows the pressure is on, and they think a total Bolton blockade is untenable. And Schumer had been mocking the whole idea. He said the same thing you just did. You know, yeah, it's in a skiff and it's a book. it's a manuscript. So
it's a manuscript that, by the way, one copy was sent over to the White House, which is what they have to do for vetting. Yeah. They do that. Trump claims he didn't even know it was there, that his lawyers had no idea it was there. If that's true, then it just shows how incompetent they all are. But of course, it's not true because Trump lies every time he opens his mouth. But the thing is, what they're saying now is it's obvious that somebody there made copies of it and spread it around, because that's the only way people would know what was in it. And, you know, they're just indicting themselves. It's a circular firing squad, but nobody's getting killed.
I wish somebody would finally get just everything they deserve. One of the things Schumer did say, and it's really getting boring because you watch TV news or whatever you want to call it these days, and from show to show to show, they have different interviews with different people, different Congress people, and they tell you things, and then the next show tends to ignore what they were just told. So they keep asking the same questions as if they're brand new. Schumer said the following: "We want 4 witnesses and 4 documents. That's it. No bargain. No."
Right. Well, that's
bargain.
But then I heard Schiff say something, you want to call Hunter Biden? Go for it. He has nothing to do with abuse of power and the charges of impeachment. And I don't think they'll get 51 votes for Hunter Biden. We'll see.
Well, they may or may not. I know. Yep. But here's the other point. There shouldn't be a bargain because the Republicans have 53 votes. They don't need to bargain. They can do anything they want.
That's right. Exactly. They don't have to make a deal one for one. They have the votes, allegedly. If they want to call Hunter Biden or Joe Biden, call them. Hold a vote for it. Call them. They don't need to make a one for one deal, which means that they may not have the votes for them.
Exactly. So this whole bargaining talk it's a big fat waste of time. That's not what's going to end up happening. They'll take a vote and it'll either pass or it won't pass.
Right.
That's what you said Friday, I think.
Yep.
Schumer said, "We want the truth as expeditiously as possible." He says, "I don't think courts are going to mess with privilege, with the privilege question," because they won't. They'll look at this and say, first of all, you have a Supreme Court justice sitting there. And second of all, you're the Senate. You vote and you either override the Supreme Court justice or he makes the decision for you. So Schumer doesn't think the courts will waste their time on privilege.
I certainly hope not.
I mean, a lot of people are questioning again over and over the same questions over and over on it'll get caught up in the courts for 3 months or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And Schumer's saying, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think they're going to do that.
No, I don't think so. And the thing is, you've got the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court presiding over the court. Why can't he just, rule as a judge does in any normal trial setting?
He could, and then the Senate could also then
overrule him.
Yes. Yeah. So, he can do whatever he wants. He's not going to because, one, he's a chicken shit.
And he doesn't want to be overruled,
Yeah. And he's trying to sort of, lay back like Rehnquist did.
Mm-hmm.
And 3, he's a Republican. So,
of course he is.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham said, I totally support Langford's proposal about the manuscript and the skiff, blah, blah, blah. And so M.T. Will said, I'm so old, I remember when Republicans complained they were not speaking to the human beings who were firsthand witnesses.
Ooh.
Yep, yep, that's true.
Yep.
You can talk. You can't cross-examine a book.
No, no, you can't.
You can't do that. No. Books don't talk.
Nope.
Unless they're books on tape and then they talk. But that's different because
but they don't talk to you. They don't answer. Hey, can I butt in with something? Because I don't want to run out of time before I get to this. Because this is, it just really gets me. I mentioned earlier that today is, you know, Dis Bernie Day on Twitter. It's we've got the DNC going after him.
We have week,
right
the
there because of course, because his numbers keep going up and the Democratic Party elders are getting scared. Yesterday, I made the mistake of turning on Morning Jerk because Donnie Douche was on. You know, he's the idiot who said I don't know why they have him on there because he's a rich New Yorker. I don't know who inherited
his
money.
I've never watched the show.
So he was complaining about Bernie, basically, you know, if Bernie gets a nomination, I don't even know what he said. I turned it off. I said, bye. Well, now Tweety is getting in the act. We've talked about Chris Matthews before. He needs to fucking go home. He needs to retire. They need to put him out to pasture already. So yesterday, I didn't hear this, but apparently this happened on the air. This is Chris Matthews talking to Joe Scarborough. The man just has such tortured logic. See if you can follow where he's going with this.
It's sort of like the question pollsters ask. Who cares about people like you? And my question is a little more direct than that. Suppose you're lying on a road hurt. Maybe you've had something happen to you. You fainted, whatever happened. Which of the candidates would stop their car and get out and help you? Which of them? Ask yourself that question. And you got your candidate, I think.
What?
Because I'm not sure about all of them. I've been polling this sort of in, you know, I think Biden wins that one pretty
question,
easily. I think Elizabeth maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think Bernie wins it.
What?
You? Honestly? Think Bernie would stop and help you? I'm not sure.
Well,
I know these are tough questions. They cut to the gut, but they are the question. You got to ask
about, it isn't
will
the
this
question.
Person help me when I need him?
And yeah, of course he
because
would.
Because the rest is BS. It's all speech writing.
Okay, so I'll say, I think Bernie would help me.
You're covering yourself. Joe, you're covering yourself.
So that's where Chris Matthews is coming.
You know, did it again on his show.
And he did it again on his show. Well, isn't that funny?
The panel, and the panel wouldn't answer. They said they wouldn't go for it. They were obviously
it's
annoyed.
A ridiculously stupid question. Bernie wouldn't get, if you're lying on the road, he wouldn't get out of his car to help you. Well, interestingly enough, a story from a couple of years ago is now going viral.
He's someone that I really, really admire and I've always wanted to meet.
But UDC law student Amy Corrado, who also sings opera at Georgetown Law, never thought she'd meet him this way.
I was crossing a street.
Wednesday evening, Amy ventured onto Massachusetts Avenue heading to a music lesson on Capitol Hill.
Went straight past Senator Sanders and kind of actually recognized him a little bit from behind.
She turned around to find Sanders very worried.
Before I could even say anything, he was just like, ma'am, you gotta get off the street. There's incoming traffic. And the only thing that could come out of my mouth was, oh my goodness, are you Senator Sanders? And he was just like, yes, but you have to get off the street.
Amy quickly made it back to Sanders.
A crowd had began to form at that point, and he was like, well, if we're gonna take a picture, we have to do it really, really fast. So he indulged me with a selfie.
She posted it on Facebook, where it's now been shared thousands of times. She's not sure what would have happened if Sanders hadn't been there. She's just glad he was.
I'm pretty glad it happened. I've always wanted to meet Senator Sanders, so it's
and
kind
he
of
saved my
something
life.
I can cross off my DC bucket list.
Go figure. I was in the street about to get hit by a car, and he saved me. Tweety,
Joe
put
Biden
that in your...
didn't.
Joe Biden didn't. By the way... just to remind you about Chris Matthews, someone said, I think he's going senile. This is nothing new. 4 years ago, this is one of my favorite clips, when there were 17 or 18 Republicans debating on the stage, Chris Matthews called on his expertise to tell us who was going to be the nominee. And he knows because this is what he does for a living. Hold on. Now I just lost my my clip. Oh, shit. I had it right here. Tweety, where
the
are
one.
You? Come on, Tweety. I know you're here. I just saw you a minute ago.
Do you want me to read you a tweet in the meantime? It's about Bernie. It's exactly
sure,
where we
go
are.
Ahead. Okay, sure.
rogue White House senior advisor who has come out to endorse Bernie, which shocked me, by the way, said, starting to hear a lot of, quote, I'll take four more years of Trump over Bernie from big time voices to regular folks on the left, end quote. Sorry, but if you're okay with more Trump over any candidate, let alone a damp turd, you are not on the left.
Oh, who said that?
Rogue White House senior advisor.
Wow. Oh, my God.
He's going to end up running for office, by the way, he claims. I'm not sure if he is or not, but he I think it's a he claims. To,
okay. All right. Yeah. So I found it. So here's here's Chris Matthews 4 years ago calling on his expertise. This is what he does for a living, telling us who was going to be the Republican nominee in 2016.
And the nomination is going to Rand Paul. You watch. This is what I do for a living.
Oh, boy. Not quite.
You know, there are rumors that apparently Nicole Wallace's show is doing so well. And Chuck Toad's Meet the Press Daily isn't. They want to move him to 9 o'clock in the morning, expand her to 2 hours. And what I say is they need to just dump Tweety already. Give her 3 hours. I don't care. Get him off the air.
And Chucky said that he'd rather just do Sundays. So. Okay.
Yeah, we'd rather you don't do any of it, Chuck. Give it to Katie Turr, who actually, Mondays, I watch that show because she hosts it. I like Katie Turr. She's fine. I think sometimes she has guests that she probably doesn't have any control over. Maybe I'm giving her too much credit. I don't know.
I don't know either. I always wonder that, but I like her generally too. I think she's fair for the most part. Yep. I haven't ever gotten mad at her.
Yeah, there's a handful of them. I like her. I like Chris Hayes.
Nicole.
I actually like Nicole Wallace because I think she's honest.
I do too. And even I think though, she knows a lot. Yep. I love that she's so knowledgeable.
Yep. I like Ayman Mohideen. And I like Ali Velshi.
Yeah, I always liked Ali.
So that's my group.
That's my group, too.
Yeah.
We have the same group. Okay, Open Secrets tweeted, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, John Thune, and Mitt Romney, all senators serving as jurors in the impeachment trial that have received campaign contributions from members of the Trump's defense team. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Saying, oh
it
my
got
God.
Very quiet.
Oh, my God. I'm just oh, my Godding. Oh, my God.
Okay. Adam Klassfeld is live tweeting. And he was at first said something like Ron Johnson was all for Bolton coming forward and testifying.
Okay.
But then he started to qualify. And it ends up what he said was he should come forward and tell the public what you know. I think that would be a smart thing. Without involving the trial.
What?
Yeah. Try to make sense of that. Come out and say stuff.
Yeah.
I guess he just wants them to get on a mic.
Oh, go something. Like go on television, but don't go under oath.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of good that'll do.
That doesn't make any sense. He just wants to hear his side of the story, he says.
Oh, my God.
Oh, by the way,
Senator
Doug Jones.
Yeah.
He says that the president's team made good arguments yesterday.
Oh, my God. Well, so did Joe Manchin. He said both sides did.
Oh, at least he said both sides. Well, that's good. Crew tweeted that.
Crew, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington.
Well, that's the very people.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. They said criminal abuse of power, Trump's five crimes connected to Ukraine. One, bribery. Mm-hmm. Two, soliciting foreign campaign contribution. Three, coercion of political activity. Four, misappropriation of federal funds. And five, obstruction of Congress. So Republicans want crimes. They got crimes.
Yeah.
Five of them.
Yeah.
Crew. Yeah. Crew knows stuff.
Crew does know stuff. And but speaking of Crew, you know, they're one of the groups that have filed lawsuits over the emoluments violations by this administration. And, you know, the Trump Hotel in Washington is being sold. And apparently, the Washington power elite are freaking out because that's their, you know, that's their gathering spot.
What I'm hearing is
the people that are going to buy this hotel are not very Trump friendly. And I don't know if that's true. I don't know who they are. It's just something I read yesterday. So I hope it's true.
Yeah, I read the same thing a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. I've forgotten who the buyers are. By the way, John Kelly is now saying that
he believes Bolton
should get out there.
Yeah, John Kelly is saying if Bolton said it, I believe him.
That's right. And John Kelly's, you know, such a swell guy.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But that is something that politically means something.
That's right.
I'm okay with that. Okay. Now.
I'm okay. You're okay.
I'm okay. You're okay. Remember that. Uh-huh. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Wow. Oh, well, obviously you do. You brought it up. That's silly that I even said that. Top Ukraine official. I trusted Bolton more than anyone, says the request to investigate the Bidens rattled Zelensky's team. And the one person in the administration he trusted was Bolton.
Oy, the mustache of power.
The mustache. But the interesting thing is, he said that, in other words, the Zelensky's team was pressured.
Well, of course they were.
We know that.
Duh. Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. James Carter.
Who is Jimmy Carter's grandson.
That's indeed true. Mm-hmm. And we follow each other. And uh-huh. I noticed a tweet that popped up. He's over the BBC report showing Trump next to Netanyahu. And he's saying this is a historic day. And Netanyahu pays tribute to Trump, calling his plans a realistic path to a durable peace, which is already failing. James Carter says, Netanyahu showing his acting chops today by keeping a straight face.
Right. Well, of course. Was it even mentioned that Netanyahu was indicted on three counts today? Three criminal counts today? I'm talking about in Trump's little, ceremony thing.
Oh, no. Hell no.
No.
Are you kidding? Although, I don't know. I didn't watch it. I can't imagine that even came up. But he's already gotten thumbs down from, two or three different heads of other countries.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's a horrible plan. And the thing is, so Trump has Netanyahu and Benny Gantz in two separate meetings at the Oval Office yesterday to brief them on the details of this plan. But no Palestinian leader was invited.
No, that's exactly what I was saying about it. It's just like the trial.
Yep.
You leave out half of the
that's right.
The main players. And I guess Prince Jared, the king of peace plans, or the prince of peace plans, because
right.
he's a prince.
He's a prince, right.
I guess it's not working out so well.
No. Oh,
I don't
Jared.
Think it's working for him. Mm. I don't think it's the big success Trump thinks it is. Call me crazy.
Crazy. You're crazy.
Yeah. Crazy.
Crazy. Oh, yeah. Isn't that how it went? Uh-huh. There you go. That's it.
See, I can do
we're old.
Woodpecker.
Yeah, yeah.
My old days as a voiceover person. Pays off on radio. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Anyway, yeah, that's all I got in tweets, unless something else has popped up. Several things have popped up. Oh, here, somebody just tweeted to me. Dang, well, Senator Angus King is backing away from yesterday's comment. Am I being optimistic or banging my head against the wall? Yesterday, Angus King thought he had 5 or 10 senators that could come forward in favor of witnesses. And I said to this person who just tweeted me, not a chance. I believe Senator Whitehouse, who said ain't going to happen. And then this guy just came back and said, you were right. Angus King ain't going to, is wrong about what he said.
Oh my God.
So too bad.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah. I'm looking to see if there's anything I flagged. I think we pretty much went through it all. I'm obviously speechless. I'm so upset over what this man has done to this country and continues to do, and the way he is facilitated by these Republicans who let him get away with it, all because they're afraid of losing their jobs. They'd rather sell out the country than, God forbid, have to get an actual job in the private sector or start a business or something, or not be on the public dole. These are people who are always screaming about big government, and they're so afraid to lose their government paycheck.
Claire McCaskill yesterday, or whenever it was, on a panel, said, guys, I got kicked out of my job and I'm doing just great.
Right. Of course she is. She's making that MSNBC money.
Yeah.
You know, come on. She's a paid political analyst at NBC News. You know she's making good money. But the thing is, there is life after Senate, after Congress.
And there was life before
jobs
Senate.
Were never imagined to be lifelong positions. You run for office. If the people don't like the job you're doing, you get kicked out. You need to hold true to your convictions or you will get kicked out. And let's hope that's what happens on November 3rd.
I sure hope so.
All right, Laffy. We'll talk to you later.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. I don't know what we're going to do tomorrow. Tomorrow, the questioning begins at 1. We come on at 3. Maybe we'll listen to some of it. I don't know. We'll play it. We'll see what happens. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for bearing with me. Onward and upward. Whatever that means.